pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, and Nathan is not here because you touch yourself at night. But with me today is Kyle and Scott, two of the purveyors of the Imaginary Wars game store in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy.
How's it going?
Scotch. That's what I needed after a long day of mowing lawns, is more alcohol.
It's the right weather for it.
It is the right weather for it. How are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Pretty all right.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
I'm drinking Texas-style ginger ale, served piping hot.
What?
You know what that means.
You're drinking scotch. Don't act like you're not.
No, actually, scotch. I'm drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
I feel like on a 27-degree day, our masculinity is not terribly challenged by this.
Hey, Lang, you've done enough time in the States. What's 27 degrees in Fahrenheit?
Do you mean I've done enough time as in been in prison in Arizona? Or done enough time as in I used to live there?
A little column A, a little column B.
Which one is the right one?
Because I'll tell you, it's hot in prison. It's like 85 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to guess high 80s, but that was just going to be my guess. Because I know 72 is 20 degrees or 21 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Like, I went out, we sat out on the patio at the brew house and got some beers kind of this afternoon. And the waitress was bitching, complaining about the heat. I kept telling her it wasn't that bad.
Like, just bitch, like, listen.
Oh, and then Matt crashed his car into a truck, which is awesome.
Are you kidding me?
Well, he just bumpered it. Like, he didn't actually do any serious damage, but he was like trying to clear.
It's a good thing he loves his car.
Yeah, exactly. He was trying to clear the fat rear end of my 67 Newport, and he wasn't looking behind him while he was doing that, so it was pretty rad. All right, so let's get a little bit into this week in hobby. Obviously, a lot of people have been playing Warhammer here in Alberta, which is no big surprise, but what about you guys? What have you been playing lately? Well, let's talk about the game of Firestorm Armada that we played.
Sure. That was a well-played interruption.
Well, I just assumed that's the
No, keep going. Keep going.
Carry on.
I just said, let's talk about it. Jesus.
I could listen to you talk about my Dreadnought for a couple hours.
Yes, your Dreadnought was amazing. I know people have bitched and complained about the second ed rules and the changes to the Directorate and the Dendrenzi Dreadnoughts, but Scott definitely was not feeling that hurt when we played our game.
No, a couple of disruptor cannons tend to ease any of that regret.
It's funny when you game oblivious to all the chatter on the internet how you do fucking amazing.
No, that's exactly it. But okay, Kyle, you played your first game of Firestorm Armada, which was the second edition, as I was running you and Scott through it. So how'd you feel about it? We're going to talk about it a little bit more probably next week when Nathan's going to be in town. But, let's chat about it.
I thought it was pretty awesome, really. I played my Aquans, and they seemed to be pretty super cool.
I just had to get out of that mindset of, like, certain ships had their guns in the fore, and certain ships had their guns
You know what it was, is I was reading their cards all wrong. I just assumed that the top line would be the forward-firing gun. And because we had one rule book between the three of us, it was just one. I just had to keep kind of going back to it and reminding myself.
Yeah.
So I would glance at it. I mean, I wasn't dumb about it. I just would glance at it, and my mind would be like, okay, the thing on the top is your forward-firing weapon, so blah, blah, blah. And so, exactly that. I got my cruisers and my frigates mixed up every time I was playing, because in order to see what I could do, I had to go around the table, look at, your rule book. So I think that was the bigger challenge for me, was I just couldn't fucking remember for 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, any new game that you get into, you're going to do a little bit of checking the rule book. One of the nice things about Firestorm Armada that at least I've found out is it doesn't take more than a game or two before you've just pretty much memorized all the rules for your stuff. You know, it's like asking somebody what the stat line of a Marine is. Yeah, you know, what's the initiative of a Marine? Everybody knows it because they've played it enough times, you know? So I feel like Firestorm Armada is like that quite a bit as well.
I could see that happening. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's definitely a lot of fun. But what about you, Scott?
Well, from a first game perspective, I could actually understand what the rulebook was saying this time around.
Yeah, because you read the first rulebook as well, and you had a bit of trouble with it.
Ah, maybe I was just channeling a lot of dumb that day, or maybe I've just been spoiled by 40K. Mm-hmm. But
I gave first edition three shots, and each time I was just like, this is...
No, I think everyone I ever talked to had that exact same situation. Until I got
to the flights and the torpedo rules, and it just completely lost me. But seeing as how one of my two ships is a carrier, this time around it was a lot simpler. Flights were awesome. Game was awesome. I'm pretty stoked on it.
No, I was very impressed at how quick playing it is, in the sense of it feels like things are going to happen and are happening.
Yeah.
Almost, almost from the get-go, arguably turn one, but definitely turn two, stuff was happening.
Right.
And so it's very satisfying when you play. Like, it's not like Battlefleet Gothic, where it's turn three, generally, that things start to happen. And you know what I mean? Just because
the distances. Things start to happen and the game ends in turn three. Like,
yeah.
That was always the biggest problem with Gothic, was as soon as anyone got into their optimal range, or as soon as stuff started getting put down on the table, that turn, shit died, and your fleet was virtually destroyed, and you pretty much knew right then and there that you either lost this game or you had won that game. And that was one of the things that always kind of bugged me about it. We didn't get to finish our game, unfortunately. It was pretty close when we had called it, except for the fact that the directorate were going to start mopping up my Terrans across that side of the board.
They do it well.
Yeah, they did very well on that poor Tarkarian battleship, that's for damn sure. Thank God he had 10 hull points. But what it really kind of came down to was, we played about three turns, roughly. We played, well, 2.5 turns. And in 2.5 turns, you know, every turn you feel like something's happening. That's what I like about Firestorm.
Yeah, absolutely.
The games may take 3 hours or 3.5 hours to play at about 1,000 points if you're not really seasoned with it like I am. But really it's like you feel like stuff's happening. You don't feel like you're bored through the first two turns, or that, you know, the last few turns are just, you know, nothing going on and you're just kind of pissing around waiting for the game to end. Like, it really does feel like things are happening through each turn. And actually,
even throwing those four dice at something at range band four feels like you'd knock out, you know, a support ship.
Or well, and it's even just exploding sixes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you happen to throw a six in there, suddenly the whole game changes.
Yeah.
Well, the exploding dice rule is one of the things. I just like that they named it something so that it was very clear when the exploding dice rule was being applied and when it was not being applied. That was one of the problems in the older book as well. But they did fix that up in second edition quite a bit. Okay, any other gaming you guys did this week? Again, I was supposed
sorry,
to
I was
going to
add. I was just going to add to that. Did you know that they... retroactively on their site have reinstalled the MAR rules as if both players agree, they're back in the game.
Yeah, yes. PDFs are posted.
Yeah, I was there in the store. I pulled it up.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. No, we had some guys in on Friday and they were all playing with them because I just felt it gives the game a bit more personality.
I do agree to.
Oh, they're new guys. It's guys who are reading the forums a lot.
Sure.
And they were playing the first game and they're like, well, the fleets need more personality. And I was kind of like, bitches, listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. And then I pulled out my GAT. But really, I don't necessarily feel like those MAR rules are all that important right now. I mean, it was definitely the case for a while, and it did feel like the game needed that flavor for a while. But for the most part, you know, I don't
bet your first dozen games you can get by with them without them and not even miss them.
Right. You know, but even after playing them for tons and tons and tons of games, I don't really feel like I necessarily need them.
Yeah,
I don't feel like it's super important to have those rules. And it really does change the dynamic of the game a lot, where certain fleets do kind of get these huge bumps where other fleets don't. They kind of get this more subtle, kind of less noticeable style of improvement.
Well, that was what was wrong with Gothic.
Right.
Gothic was the game where... you know, some Necron fleets got that huge bump while some other fleets got like dick. Like, it was just like, oh, well, you know, you'll know you've won when he's killed all your ships and you've killed two of his.
That's exactly it.
You know, you're just like, that's...
Well, and that's kind of the problem. Like, right now, Terrans with the... they don't get the shield manipulation anymore, or shield modulation. They get sector shielding on their medium and large ships for everything. And sector shielding is a pretty big rule. Like, that's pretty awesome. That's just basically giving all of your ships an extra shield point.
Well, it also...
it's very rare that you're getting shot from multiple directions on those Terran ships.
Also dictates the tactics of your opponent.
Well, very much so, right?
You know what I mean? So, like, you can... once you play it a little bit and you kind of get how it works, you can start doing crap to make it so that I have... it's like chess. I have to start doing moves I don't want to do just to deal with... your pieces.
Well, you know, but yes, I did hear about it, to answer your question. The big thing that I would say is that they didn't reinstate it. It is optional. They left it out of the rule book on purpose because they feel like it's a balance issue. Ranger, shut up! Because they feel like it's a balance. I feel like Kevin Smith right now.
Was that your son?
No. That was my dog barking.
I love that you named your son Ranger. That's so much less embarrassing than how I named my daughter Strider.
There you go. Done. But yes, not to get too far into Firestorm Armada, but really, you know, I had a lot of fun in the second edition game that I played. I'm hopefully going to be playing another game of Firestorm Armada second edition on Tuesday, and then I'll be playing Nathan again on Saturday. So hopefully by the time we do an actual review of the second edition, hopefully next week, we'll have a bit more of an in-depth idea of things, you know, big changes that the book has seen. But glad to hear that you guys both enjoyed it, because you need to paint your shit. Get it done.
Ships.
Oh, sorry. All right, so let's get into the main topic for today's show. We can do this as kind of a bit of a higher learning, because we are going to be talking about the way that the White Dwarf is kind of dictating Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000, as opposed to actually having Games Workshop put out codexes. But at the same time, we'll be talking about how we can put these things into our fleet or into our armies. Wow. And this is the new demon stuff, right? That we've seen in the White Dwarf. They had that little supplement that came with it, which is weird because we haven't said that in years. That actually does break down the new units for the demons and kind of how they're going to be played. Very, very heavy on the Slaanesh side of things. But let's talk real quick. First impressions, what do you guys feel about the models?
Scott hates the chariot that's got, was that a thresher? Is that it's a farming?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I can't look at any of these models without thinking about farming equipment. And
yeah,
it's just
but
like,
these guys are in Great Britain, and farming equipment looks like it's from a different planet.
Oh god,
that's also true.
The problem is that they even explain it as farming equipment. Like the Hellflayer fluff is like, yeah, it was a gardening tool. They turned into a chariot. It's like, are you guys kidding?
Well. You know, I think the funny thing about it is you have to sit there and you say, like, okay, I get that maybe you just want to have something different on the table and you want it to look interesting and you want it to maybe look not the norm. But really, there wouldn't have really been anything wrong with just making it a bigger chariot or adding, you know, bigger spikes or just making it into some sort of pseudo vehicle. What really bothers me about it is yes, it looks like farming equipment. And when we're talking about Warhammer, that's fine. But really, like when you start talking about putting this stuff into 40K, it all just seems laughable to me. I get that they're demons and it's so magical and that's why it has fucking four hull points like a Land Raider. But it's just kind of ridiculous to actually look at this stuff and say like, oh, yeah, that needs to go right into 40K. That totally looks like something that should be in 40K.
Yeah, it's a little absurd. I mean, the example they give is it, you know, running over guardsmen, but pretty well anything runs over guardsmen.
Well, you know, like the orcs, it's not like the orcs have farming equipment and that's what they're using for their stuff, right? Like it's just, it's pretty ridiculous. And it's kind of funny to actually look at that and try to rationalize it. Especially when you look at the farming equipment from behind, there's a couple of nice half ass cheeks to stare at.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
And I just, it's just fucking hilarious.
It's going to get a lot of guys past being dateless.
That's also true. I think the Screamers of Tzeentch are pretty funny, the models, because they're almost the exact same models. It looks like they just glued on a couple of extra eyes.
Yeah, they're toothier, and there's more eyes going on.
When I heard that they were going to make new Screamer models, I was just like, sweet, thank you. We don't need flying manta rays. Like, this is a mistake. And then they just released the new models, and it's just the same thing with...
But the idea bank was closed that day.
I actually like the flying manta rays. I've got no problem.
I think they're fine, but I get what you mean with. Well, what it begs is, so they thought that the old horrors really needed to be revamped into beaky things.
Yes.
And they looked at the old mantas and said, no need to change anything, not a thing. Actually, could you add more teeth?
Let's give it some more eyeballs too. Let's do that while we're at it.
Could you make those teeth a little bit more tusk-like? And I do like how they describe them as mandibles, and I'm just like, why? Well, I guess so. Like, I guess they kind of...
They should have Google-imaged mandibles.
Yeah, no shit, right? Like, they don't...
You know, it's like how they should have Google-imaged wolves when they were doing the Space Wolf stuff.
Right, exactly.
and not looked up lolcats.
Oh, God.
Come on, look at Canis Wolfborn. Tell me he's not riding a giant
right.
cat.
Let's not
well,
get
you know, okay.
further.
the Seeker Chariot's the one that I like the most out of all of those chariot ones, just because it's the most subdued-looking one.
It makes sense.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I do love the look of the new Plague Bearers. I'm pretty happy.
I was going to ask what you thought about all the Nurgle stuff looks really good.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I'm not sold on the Nurglings
Oh, see, I totally am. I just like that they're a big pile of them now.
I love that they're a pile of them, but it would have been awesome if they were a less cartoonish pile of them.
Oh, fair enough. I haven't taken a good look at them. I was just very impressed
by... Take a good look at them before you talk, you fucking idiot.
Those are awesome. Damn it. Man, those are so cool. I'm already signing up for 4 packs and I don't even play Chaos.
Fair enough. But no, I mean, but that was the thing, is it was like they gave you the Plague Bearers, and the Plague Bearers don't look cartoonish. They look desiccated and bloated and fucked up. And then you go look at the Nurglings and they just look like just dumb. Like there's one where there's a Nurgling yanking on another Nurgling's tongue and he's like, rah! And it's just really,
you know, it's because in all the fluff, they've always described the Nurglings as those playful, mischievous things that are coming out of, you know, rotting intestines and whatever. And I think someone just totally missed on the whole picture and was like, playful, mischievous. Okay. And that's what they got. Like, and I don't hate it, but I see what you're saying. Like, it's, they used to look kind of demonic and a little humorous, like darkly humorous, as opposed to, aw shucks, they look cute. Can I take one home today?
Right.
As long as they don't feed them after midnight.
Yeah, don't put water on them and don't feed them after midnight. And then the flamers, I don't like them.
I like the old ones a lot better.
I think the old ones look nice. I think there's this really weird sort of modeling trend happening right now in Games Workshop where anything that has to do with fire or has fire in the name in any sort of context, they feel like they have to model the fire in a very shitty way on the model. And it's just like, even the heavy metal painters sit there and they go like, fuck, I have to paint fire.
What are we
fire?
Supposed to do with this?
And so they try to paint it, but it's very clear that they just kind of give up after a while because it just looks so fucking stupid. And it's just, I hate anything with fire modeled on it. Like, if the guy's holding a torch and he's holding it in the air and you model a little bit of fire on the torch, that's fine. But, like, hex wraiths and these, they look like shit. Like, well, you don't need fire coming out of every orifice, you know, like they swallowed a firecracker or something like that. And then the blue scribes, sure, why not?
I friggin' hate the blue scribes.
I don't see the point.
I love Zinch.
I like flying tortillas. Oh, my God.
Seriously. That
flying
is what,
demonic tortillas?
It's like a
They
a
would make a good wrap,
tortilla.
I suspect. Mm. Throw a little bit of, I don't know, Havarti in there and some sliced meats.
No, I used to play bass for Flying Demonic Tortillas. or was it Soaring Demonic Tortillas? But okay, let's talk a little bit about the rules now. We're going to stick primarily to 40K because I feel like 40K is the place where you're going to have a little bit more debate into whether or not you should be putting them into your army. I think in fantasy, what they bring to the table is a very, very good replacement for stuff like Seekers and for stuff like the Fiends of Slaanesh.
Let me sidetrack.
I figure I'll bring that in when Nathan.
What do you think about Soul Grinder coming in to the fantasy side? Like I was saying to Scott earlier, I was like, I wasn't aware that Chaos and Fantasy just need whatever tool they could get in their toolbox, just so maybe they could eke out a minor victory or a draw. Like it.
That sarcasm needed to drip a little heavier.
I mean, we're not 7th edition, so it's not as sarcastic as it could have been, but it struck me that
they're still pretty amazing.
That's what I mean. Like, it just, you know, new demon models I get, but I don't know. A guy's just like, you know what? We should just give them Soul Grinder. I mean, obviously, so they can sell a few more, but, you know, it's a balanced game will sell itself.
Right.
It was a
and you're talking about the special rule for Soul Grinder.
And they needed it.
Yeah,
so they decided to just do that.
Well, and again, we're talking about Games Workshop. They want that shit to sell.
Yeah.
Right? And people are already playing demons and they already have the armies. So unless it's good, unless it really stands out, you're going to be hard pressed for demon players.
Well, I guess the model doesn't sell. I think that's probably what it is. They're now desperate to get that shit paid off. They invested in 4 years ago before everyone decided that it was a crap model and they weren't going to play with it.
Right.
Because I mean, no one likes it.
No.
Some guys, everyone liked it in the first month, and then when they got it open and put it together, it was like, meh, I can't say it's the angriest thing I'm about for purchasing, but I noticed there's a curious lack of them showing up anywhere, both
right.
It looks
casual games and tournaments.
What's that?
It still looks better than a Defiler.
But the Defiler, Defiler predates that by 5 years.
Yeah, I like the Defiler still. I feel like the Defiler is the...
That's like getting mad at the Chaos Dreadnought. I mean, yes, you're right. And B, shut the fuck up, because you have no right to make fun of how it looks.
Yes,
it's like making fun of someone and how they laugh.
Suck a dick.
It's like, it's not his fault.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, and again, I'm not going to try to argue that you're crazy not to love the Defiler, but I've always had a soft place in my heart for the Defiler. But Okay, let's talk a little bit about the rules for the Screamers of Tzeentch for 40K, because I feel like that's the most interesting thing to talk about right now.
Yeah.
They're amazing. I adore them.
They're fucking fantastic.
Unreal.
Demonic good. Fire in their mandibles is, I feel like, the best thing I ever read in the last month.
You know, the first time I read the rules, I thought that that was an alternative.
Want to talk about trying to make sure that people buy a unit that has never sold well?
Yeah.
Bam. That's it right there. Now, what's the unit size? Because I don't have that in front of me.
3 to 9.
Are you fucking shitting me?
Dead serious.
Is it 3 per box?
How many points are they apiece?
They're 25 points a model.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So they're 3 attacks, 4 on the charge, strength 5, AP 2.
Strength 5, AP 2, armor
base. You know what? Yeah. You should go through the whole rules, because there's going to be people out there who have not had the opportunity to buy this.
Okay, yeah. Let's break
not
this.
Not because they don't want to.
Well, people who haven't had people who don't have the White Dwarf right now, that's fine. The new Screamers in Warhammer 40,000 are classed as jet bikes, meaning that they can make a 36-inch turbo boost move, which gives them a 4-plus cover save. Now, they are demons, which means they already have a 5-plus invulnerable save to go with it. Now, the Screamers have a stat line of weapon skill 3, ballistic skill 0, strength 4, toughness 4, 2 wounds, initiative 4, attacks 3, leadership 10, and then they show save dash, but they've got special rule demon, which means they're still 5-plus invulnerable. They basically have a close combat attack that is strength 5, AP 2, armor bane. So 2d6 on top of strength 5 for armor penetration, and because it's AP 2, it's plus 1. Because it's AP 2, you're killing Terminators with this fucking thing. 3 attacks apiece killing Terminators. That's fucking crazy. Not to mention the fact that they are jet bikes, which means they get the Hammer of Wrath on the charge, so that's still a bunch of strength 4 hits at initiative 10 to go with it. Slashing attack is another rule that goes with the Screamers of Tzeentch. If a unit of Screamers moves over one or more unengaged enemies with its turbo boost movement, choose one unit. It suffers D3 strength 4 hits with AP dash per Screamer that moved over the unit. The final position of the Screamers is what you use for wound allocation, so if you land behind them, that's the direction you're removing models from. Vehicles are always hit on their side armor. But again, you're not going to get the armor bane on that, so it doesn't necessarily matter. But, I mean, really, this...
Oh, I'm already going to buy 2 boxes and have an ally to my Eldar. No, I got it worked out, because the Eldar will ally with Dark Eldar. And, I mean, Dark Eldar and Chaos are just a shade apart, so that's how I've worked it out.
Wow.
That one deserved a drink, I think.
Yeah, I took a swig right then and there. But really, these are amazing. I mean, literally, like, you can't get a better jet bike unit. You know, like, arguably, there's nothing else in the game that's going to compare to this. They've got 2 wounds apiece. They're toughness 4. They've got a 5-plus invulnerable save. I mean, they're jet bikes. They're going to get a 5-plus cover save on top of that, even if they just so much as move. But the fact that they get a 4-plus cover save when they turbo boost, they're moving 36 inches, and with 2 wounds apiece and a 5-plus invulnerable save, like, these are going to be exceptionally hard to kill. And they're going to be coming out just blowing units off the table. I mean, virtually any Marine player out there is going to be pissing his pants when he sees these things get deployed on the table. Because there's really nothing he has to deal with them.
Yeah. No, it almost feels like these kits didn't really sell before.
That's what I was saying.
Just like the Soul Grinder. Well, we'll give them to Fantasy, so that way, you know, maybe we'll sell a few more. Screamers, well, we'll just make them awesome, so you're going to be a fucking retard if you don't take them.
Well, and that's exactly it. Like, I know that Nathan's been playing his demons in Warhammer 40,000 as well, and I don't think that he could ever actually look at this kit and say, well, you know, I'm just going to go...
I've got this other... You're not even going to say, I've got this other plan. Like, you're not going to be like, yeah, that's awesome, but I've got this covered. You're going to look at them and be like, those need to be in my...
How do I fit these into my list?
Yeah.
And that's all it really comes down to. I think 6 is a minimum. Obviously, they're going to sell them in boxes of 3. You know, they're still plastic, so yay, no fine cast.
Yep.
I think that's the big win for everybody on this one. Yeah, that's the big win for everybody.
It's almost like they planned it that way.
Almost. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Flamers for 40K, because they're the other one where you just look at them and laugh and say, why the fuck would I want anything to do with them? the models
are shit. I do like their points value in a very Bill and Ted kind of way. They're 69 points.
I don't even know how to take that. I like it in a Bill and Ted's kind of way, because my instant reaction is, wait, Bill and Ted's or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, I'm sorry.
Okay, so not Bogus Journey?
No, oh God, no. I've never seen Bogus Journey. I boycotted it when it came out.
Okay, good man, because I was going to say, because that could be good or fucking awful. I'm baffled at the fact that they're jump infantry. The fact that they have two wounds, okay, fine, why not? The fact that they have two attacks, again, okay, fine, why not? They've got Warp Fire and Breath of Chaos. But really, it's just, there's, you know, if you're looking for a combat unit, you've got a lot of other stuff to choose from. If you're looking for a hard-hitting shooting unit in your demon army, it's kind of like, why? Why do you really feel like you need a shooting unit? You know? They're going to get charged. They're going to get destroyed. They're going to get wiped out. Like,
I don't think so.
Okay, well, I don't remember off the top of my head. You might have it there in front of you. Warpfire is AP4?
Warpfire is the template. No, not Warpfire. Breath is the template. Warpfire is AP4, yeah.
Yeah,
but
Warp
I'm thinking,
Fire
if you get
AP4.
Charged with these things, you overwatch with Breath. Because it's a shooting template attack, right?
Yeah, but it's only D3. But again, if it's AP4, who gives a shit?
No, I'm talking about Breath.
No, I get it.
The template that ignores all saves except invulns.
Is that what Breath of Chaos does?
Yeah, that's the Breath of Chaos template.
Now, that's kind of an interesting thing. Now, is that actually going to count as a flamer in this particular connotation, or is it just going to be a breath weapon? Because I don't know how breath weapons, I don't know how breath weapons are handled in 40K.
Okay.
Now,
I could be wrong, but when I was looking at the rules the other day when I was playing Jason, the basically any template.
No, you're right. If it says template, if it counts as template, then that's the rule it has, actually.
Yeah, that's exactly.
No, you're right. Because I was actually thinking something similar to that when I was looking between large and small blast.
Yeah.
And then they separate the difference between that and template, and everything else classified as template gets that rule. So you're right. Interesting.
I think
still, I wouldn't take them.
I totally would. Jump infantry makes them mobile. They're 30% less points now. They used to be 35, and they've dropped down to 23. They've lost Bolt, which kind of sucks, but you never hit with that anyway. But two wounds, toughness 4, two attacks even in combat. If you charge into a unit of 9 of those things, you're taking 9d3 that ignores your armor and cover on the charge. Like, I think they're fine. I don't know if they'd be my first choice.
Okay, and fair enough, Scott. But really, I think the funny thing about 40K here, though, is you just would never charge them. You know, like, they're going to come up and they might try to get breath weapons on you. But, like, that's when you would just be putting all of your shooting into that unit and wiping them out. It's not like they're the screamers where turn 1, they're in your deployment zone. Turn 2, they're in combat. Like, these things are moving up the table. Yeah, they're moving up 12. They're running if they're not going to shoot, if they're out of range. But you've got more than enough of an opportunity to shoot them down. I'm assuming their max squad size is 10?
They're 9 as well.
9 as well. So, I mean, like, that's not terrible. You just can't be stupid. My dog is now chewing on a ball. And I'm sorry, Ranger, but you're fucking driving me up the wall right now. No, I don't love you. I don't. Leave.
What a terrible thing to say to your son.
Get out! All right. But really, I mean,
I left the door unlocked outside. Go busy yourself.
You know, like, this
I know
is
it's dark.
You want to talk about target priority? People putting these on the table, they're just going to get torn to pieces. You know, at toughness 4, heavy bolters are going to be ruining their day.
Why do you disagree, Scott?
I'm not disagreeing at all, but I ask you, how many heavy bolters do you see on the table right now?
Well, are you talking about 5th edition or 6th edition? Because 6th edition heavy bolters are all over the place.
I guess. I just don't think these things are any less survivable.
I hear in some parts of the world it's still 5th edition, though.
Oh, God. Stupid Edmonton.
Yes, there was a... I remember it was somebody saying, like, oh, are you going to play this weekend? I was like, yeah, maybe I'll play 40K. They're like, awesome, it's 5th edition. I'm like, fuck that.
Nope.
I am not playing in that tournament. But I heard it was good. Okay.
Well,
so
we're going to go back and forth
for
all night, Lang, but I do not think you're going to convince me that these guys aren't awesome. I already own 3, and I'm probably going to get 6 more.
I mean, they've got the same stat line as the Screamers, one less weapon skill. And obviously they have a ballistic skill, but they're still initiative 4. They still have 2 attacks apiece with a champion, leadership 10, demon, all that kind of good stuff. I just feel like they're going to be a problematic unit. Even if you are taking a max unit size, they're going to get hammered pretty hard in the first turn. And depending on who you're playing against, you know, having D3 wounds, no armor saves on the charge really isn't all that scary. You know, an orc player with 30 guys coming in at you. Oh, wait, I lost 6 orcs. Meh. You know,
yeah, but that's the whole game, though. I mean, you can't go up against everything. Like, you can't be like, well, I found the thing, nothing can counter. Like, the whole game is about countering everything.
Well, true enough, Kyle, but the big thing...
It depends what's on the table is where I'm going with that.
No, and I do agree with that partially, but right now, one of the big things is what we're saying is this is really going to affect Space Marines, but there's very few armies right now that are very few people right now who are trying to push heavily for combat-heavy Space Marine armies. Unless they're Terminators, you know, most people are going to try to avoid combat as much as possible because... we actually got a letter from an email from Brian Sin here, and I'm going to bring it up. I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up now because it actually pertains to kind of to what we were talking about here. And that includes me clickety clacking on the screen and moving my mouse in such a way that I log out of this account and log into that account. Hey, there you go. Play by play. He says I'm not. He says he's always been a big fan of combat heavy armies. He says in 5th edition combat armies had to deal with transports. He said in 6th edition combat armies have to deal with losing models from the front, overwatch, and random charge length. He says, can you see combat armies working competitively at all in 40k, or should it be left to fantasy at this point? Thank you, Brian, for sending that in. But really, I feel like that the answer to that is yes, but you have to have the numbers now. Horde armies are the true combat armies now in Warhammer 40,000, and kind of everyone else has been relegated back to having to depend on their shooting in order to keep them on the table and to keep them competitive. But if you look at the way armies are constructed in Warhammer 40,000, that makes total sense.
Okay.
Did I lose you?
No.
Scott?
I respectfully disagree.
Then respectfully disagree. Don't just be quiet. Disagree with me. That's
just
fine.
I'm just judging you quietly.
That does not work on a podcast.
Oh, from I'm just drinking, and that seems to work just fine.
You have to understand that, like, it's quick replies, man. That dead space. We lose listener.
Fair enough. They're just dropping like flies. From the number of games I've watched go down, I've played, like, 8 or 9 games of 6 said by now, and a lot of stuff I'm seeing is a big shift towards monstrous creatures being the close combat answer. Or elite troops like Terminators. I have not seen hordes do very well at all.
Really?
The reduction in cover means that blast and template weapons are doing huge numbers on them. Overwatch slaughters them, reduces their charge distance. Like, I do not see hordes doing well. I've played against a horde 3 or 4 times.
But that first really game I lost is more like the 5th edition mentality still, right? Because you've got, what, 1 30-man unit on the table? And that's considered...
Oh, maybe. I mean, and I think that's a good point. But if everyone's gaming like it's 5th edition...
Yeah,
that's still what the metagame is right now, as opposed to what it could be, right?
Right.
I mean, that was the whole
Scott though is like, where are you playing still the 5th edition horde list, which is like 1, maybe 2 large units, as opposed to what we saw in 4th edition? If I go back that far, where Tyranid players were showing up to the table with, you know, 4 and 5 30-man units.
I haven't seen anything of that mass, honestly. But I think
Horde becomes almost impossible to deal with in 6.
The list I played against was Berserkers and Khorne marked dudes on foot. And it was 2 squads, like 20 shooty Khorne marked Chaos Marines.
I wouldn't even call that a horde.
I'm not done. 2 units of those dudes, so 40 bodies there. And then 2 other units of, it was like 12 or 15 Berserkers.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty big mass. No, I did not play against a 120-man Green Tide, and I suspect that would probably do pretty okay.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm getting at now, is the combat armies that are really going to be depending heavily on combat, they have to hedge their bets in such a way that they're putting a lot of models on the table. The Khorne Berserker army gets away with it because they've got transports, and they're able to get up the table, and they're able to play a slightly different combat game that's more dependent on turn 3 charges. But if you're playing Tyranids, or you're playing Orcs, or... I don't know. I mean, it could be argued that you could get away with it with Tau and Kroot as well. But really, it's like, if you're playing those... Sorry, what?
I said, but no one loves Tau.
No one would. I mean, it's very possible to see it, actually, because their staggered initiatives between Kroot Hounds, Krootox, and Kroot is actually really, really good for combat in this edition.
You know, all joking aside, Tau looks really good in this edition.
I don't think anybody's looking at Tau and saying, oh, they're shit.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the nice thing about 6th edition as a whole, to kind of get back to that, is, you know, much like what they did with 8th edition, where it suddenly was up for grabs, there's no army that's pure shit anymore. I mean, they kept saying Wood Elves are the most terrible army in the world, but, you know, Matt Lau took first at Warhammered with his Wood Elf army.
Yep.
You know, and that's not the first time that guy's taken first.
No.
You know, like, it has nothing to do with the fact that oh, these armies are broken, and it's this, that, and the other thing. It really does come down to, well, we're in 6th edition now, and they've built this edition in such a way that no army's really been phased out just because they're out of date. Okay, but let's get back to the demons a little bit here. Let's start talking about some bear asses. Yeah. Oh,
you mean bear like men in their 40s and Turkish baths?
I would play those before I'd play the Hellflare.
Would you?
Yes.
Speaking of Turkish, rape prisons, the new Batman is terrible. I just want to throw that out there.
It was awesome.
It's a shitty movie.
Nope.
It's fucking awful. Hey, Catwoman, no guns, no killing. Well, that's no fun. Well, actually, killing's okay as long as you're in a jet with 3 Gatling guns on it and you're mowing down criminals like fucking wheat and blowing up tanks with people in it and watching them
burn.
Oh, fuck
yeah. He only hates handguns. That's
Batwoman, no
parents.
Guns. Wait,
no jet killed his parents. Fucking
here's a
grab
motorcycle.
A brain.
Here's a motorcycle with some M80 grenade launchers on it.
Who killed his parents? Not a rabid motorbike. No, it was some dude with a handgun. Batman hates handguns.
Handguns are hands off, sir.
Fuck you, Scott. okay, so let's talk first about the Hellflare Chariot for Warhammer 40,000. This is the one that is moderately okay to look at, where it doesn't look like a fucking piece of farming equipment gone mad. But really, I think what's interesting about this is it is a chariot, which means it is a vehicle. It's fast, it's open-topped. It's armor 11, which is strange, because I don't look at that chariot and think to myself, yeah, that looks more sturdy
than a raider. You know what's tougher than a
warwalker? That. No shit, right? Like, that really does look like a flashlight hitting it in the right place would just cripple the shit out of it and, like, pop a wheel off. Like, it really doesn't. Armor 11 on that thing is kind of ridiculous. And again, I get that they're just saying like, oh, it's demons. They're magical. It's so fucking amazing, but it's fucking dumb. And why is it if it's armor 11 on the front and the side, why is it 10 on the back? Is
the assless chaps?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Those assless chaps. If she had just worn normal panties, it would have been 11 on the back. That's exactly what it came back to.
Fine day, but no.
Scotch. 2 hull points, so it can take a glance before it pops, but really open-topped at armor 11 means that it's going to be gone usually in the first salvo no matter what you do to it. It's fast. That's great. But really the weird thing about these chariots, and I'll kind of get into this a little bit more when we talk about the other one, but the problem is that it's never going to get into combat. The way that the rules work for cover and the way that like jink and all those things work, like this thing is going to get blown up by a last cannon on the first round. Like it's never going to get into combat because it's going to need at least minimum. It's going to need at least 3 turns to get into combat if it's playing a shooting list.
The good news is it's pretty cheap. The extra good news is you can take them in squads.
Like infiltrate them and have them like hop out of cover all unexpected like.
Well, they do deep strike in, I guess, don't they? Because they're still demons.
Yeah, they're still demons. You can still deep strike them in.
It's a thing.
Maybe that's what it is
because they're armor 11.
Well, no, it's a vehicle. The vehicle doesn't count as demonic. It's only actual demonic units. And the Exalted Allurus. Exalted Allurus is the only thing that counts as demon. The actual vehicle doesn't count as demon. So I don't know if you would be able to deep strike it in. I'm actually not that. Oh, actually, no.
You'd have to. The way they listed in the rules.
If you go down, it says Hellflayer Demon Fleet. Okay, so yes, it does. And it's fleet, so you reroll your charge distance. So that's not terrible. You could get the long turn 2 charge.
Yeah.
But really, I think it's frustrating. How many points are these apiece?
60. Yeah, for the Hellflayer.
That's when you could take 2 Screamers.
Can't you get 7 Rhinos for 60 points?
7 Rhinos and half a Raider.
So it's got Rending, obviously, like that's what you're banking on. It's got Flesh Shredder, which means that the model's Hammer of Wrath attacks are resolved at strength 4 with Rending rule. In addition, when the model charges into assault, it inflicts D6 Hammer of Wrath attacks for each hull point it has remaining. rather than the usual amount, which means that you can actually get 2d6 on the charge if it has 2 hull points remaining, which is all it has. It's at strength 4, no AP with rending, so I mean, like, that's okay. But really, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, there's a reason why people don't take Gene Stealers right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just because rending is, as fun as rending is, you know, it's totally luck of the draw and you can't bank on it. And at 60 points apiece, say you take a squad of 3, like, that's still a lot of points that you're banking on a good charge roll on. Like, even if you get 2 of them into combat, right? Like, if we say, okay, you only shoot down 1, 2 of them are going to get into combat. I think it's a hard sell. I think when you start comparing those to Screamers, I'd take, you know, for 180 points, I'd take 9 Screamers.
Yeah, but Screamers are insane. I mean, these
Well, yes,
are
that's nuts. My point.
I think the thing is like the Flamers, I think these guys are kind of like a one-trick pony. And if you can get it into that very tight situation, it's going to work well for you. If you just sort of throw them down on the table and try and make them work, I think it's not.
One other thing worth mentioning with these guys is their Hammer of Wrath attacks have rending. That's also kind of important.
I read that earlier.
Well, I'm also going to touch on Soul Scent here. Damn it, Lang. Soul, did you see that rule?
Hey, Wise Lang, ass. Did you used to play bass in Soul Scent? Oh, God.
No, that was Chaff Kruger.
So when they inflict their impact hits, or sorry, Hammer of Wrath hits, they get a number of bonus attacks equal to the number
equal
of unsaved.
Yeah.
So these things hit pretty hard if there's 2 or 3 of them. I don't know.
I think it could, like, again, but I agree with Kyle. They're a one-trick pony. They could be amazing, but it depends on who you're playing against, and it depends on...
I think because of Deep Strike, that's what makes them a bit more of a one-trick pony. It's like, well, you know, if you can get that off and get the spot you want, more or less, they're going to be good. You're going to like them, and you're going to swear by them. But the moment that it goes wrong... It's going to be a bad game. They're just going to fucking die.
One autocannon dreadnought looks at you wrong and blows off half the team.
I guess what really bothers me about them more than anything is that they are a vehicle as opposed to a model with wounds.
Yeah.
I think if they were a model with wounds, I would be a little bit more okay with having them on the table.
I was going to
follow
like
a slightly higher toughness than a model with wounds, so only like strength 10 would be insta-killing them. You know what I mean? But the fact that they're just armor 11 with 2 hull points, that means that, I mean, you're going to be...
Well, they're going to win big or lose big, right?
Well, a squad of autocannons
is going to rip big
through that thing. They're going to lose huge.
But if you get it,
throwing points away.
If they come in, you know, well orchestrated and, you know, exactly with what you need, you're going to do really well with them. And I think GW has maintained for a long time that winning big or losing big is the definition of good balance in game design.
Well, and they're not. I mean, another thing worth looking at here is they've got the demon rules. They got a 5-up invuln. So they're going to stop some incoming shooting.
Sure.
I'm trying to make an argument for these things here.
I think the middle is the road.
They're the least good choice out of any of these.
Yeah. Even than Flamers?
No, I would still take Flamers. I think that Scott made a pretty good argument about the fact that if somebody tries to charge you, you get those flame templates for the wall of fire, and then that's no armor save. So,
but what if you're a male and you're single and have a sad existence? I think these beat out the Flamers every time.
They do have the assets.
Fair enough.
Can't argue.
And there you have it, folks. That's why you should take it. Well, that's why some of you should take it.
It's an allurus. Let's make up words. All right, so the Exalted Seeker Chariot. Woo! Why?
Yeah, I don't get it.
This is the, like, we talked about how the chariots are not survivable at armor 11. And then you want to get a bigger chariot that you can't take in squads, that's more expensive and is like, yes, it has 4 hull points. So
because it's a land raider.
Well,
assless chaps?
I look at that model and I think to myself, yeah, that's sturdier than a Lehman Russ. That looks as sturdy as a land raider.
It could take at least 3 las cannons.
It definitely could take at least 3. No, I mean, that is definitely the one where I look at it and I think to myself, you know, like, this is just, it's a ridiculous model. It's ridiculous to put it in 40K, and the rules make no sense whatsoever. This thing is not going to last, you know, 2 turns on the table. And yes, you might be able to deep strike it, but really, it's just with armor 11, I don't care if you've got 4 hull points. I mean, you would get 6 with a unit of 3 of the normal Seeker Chariots. Like, it's just, it's even less of an appealing choice, in my opinion. It's got all the same rules. It has, I think the only difference that it has is the Exalted Allurus, or is that the same as the one that's on the other one as well? Let me look. No, same as what's on the other one as well. So really, it's just I can't see taking it except for the fact that if your opponent's dumb enough to ignore it, you get 46 impact hits. Woo!
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sold on it. I mean, it is only 90 points, so you can certainly just throw one in and not really feel too bad about it, but I don't think it's
I hear it's also $90.
Ooh.
Anyways, blah, I'm just being a jerk that way.
Okay, but is this still a fast attack choice, or is this a heavy support choice now?
It's heavy. Heavy support. Heavy support, so it's extra written off.
Ooh, yeah, that's a hard stuff.
My memory, what's the heavy support choices for demons?
All the good stuff.
Thanks. Oh, everything better than this. Shut up.
I don't have the book.
We're taken.
No, it's upstairs.
Hold on. I'll get it for you here in a sec. You guys just keep talking.
Cool. Okay.
All right, Kyle. It's up to you.
So what have you been gaming last week? We never got past the Firestorm Armada. What did you do last week?
Lots of 40K, honestly.
How much 40K?
Like
one game? Is that lots for you?
Thank you. Three or four games.
Oh, that is a lot.
Yeah.
I think I played three, maybe four games of 5th edition.
Yes, you haven't played any 6th yet.
No, I've been kind of busy. However, to be fair, I played War of the Ring. I taught someone to play War of the Ring on Friday. And then 5 days before, I played Firestorm Armada. And today, I painted up a platoon of infantry for Flames of War. So hobby involvement for me has actually been way more than the last 4 months combined.
Yeah.
So actually, hilariously, Scott is right, but it's only one choice. So you've got the Soul
Grinder. Is it Soul Grinder?
Yeah. The Soul Grinder is your heavy support choice that nobody really cares about. Nobody really wants it. But it's the Demon Prince of Chaos is the one that you're kind of looking at going, yeah, I could take a couple of those.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, the princes are awesome.
They're Demon sick. Princes are pretty fucking fantastic. And especially the way monstrous creatures are now in this edition.
Isn't it in Chaos Marines where they just count as having a jetpack? Isn't that what wings are?
Yeah, if you're Chaos Marines got a foot in the ass.
If you're a Marine who gets turned into a Demon Prince, well, tough shit. If you're
too heavy, all that armor on.
You don't deserve to fly. You deserve to hop. Come back in 1,000 years with enough victory.
Skip your way into combat.
Spindly enough fingers. Yeah.
All right. So that's the models primarily for 40K. There's some interesting stuff for fantasy, which we'll kind of talk about when Nathan's back, because I'm sure he's got some things to say about it and kind of how he's going to fit it into his competition Demon Army. But for the most part, that's kind of where we stand right now. Let's move on to this week's stupidity check. I guess the interesting thing for me for this week is that we've seen a lot of videos from Games Workshop, you know, when they release the videos saying like, you know, ooh, Dark Angels are coming, or, you know, ooh, look, the demons are coming. And a lot of it is either just text or it's, you know, really bad 90s video game horror sounds where it's like a girl screaming and then a child laughing. And you're supposed to be like, wow, really? Like, that is really uninspired.
This is their new PR. Did you read that article on Bell Lost Souls with the apparently GW has hired a third-party marketing company to market, whose specialty is marketing digital media?
I did not hear that.
Yeah. Well, apparently they have, and I think they may be under – maybe it was this round of videos that has them kind of going, you know what? We actually suck ass at this.
we
should have read our last year's financial report, which said we were a miniatures manufacturer and not an internet marketing capable company. I think what was I going to say about this? It's already lost to me. Your turn.
Well, I think really the stupidity check here kind of comes down to this idea that once again, they've decided that instead of releasing a codex and instead of releasing, you know, an update for these armies, they're just going to kind of plug these into the White Dwarf and kind of throw them into these armies instead of fixing kind of everything else that's wrong with.
Really a two-fisted stupidity failure. Like, it just, they totally missed it twice because they put into the White Dwarf and then they didn't make enough of them.
Yeah.
My rep on Monday talked to me. He was like, this is going to be important. You should probably order a few extra. So I did. And when I got my shipment, they emailed me my invoice and I got charged for them, but they weren't there. And the same day I got the email that they're actually sold out. And go over to a GW store and lo and behold, because they're stocked by their head office decides how much they're going to get. GW got lots of extra copies. Like, it's just like, what the hell?
They're just not thinking.
You know, well, if this is so important, then why is it extra not available? I mean, I get that a year and a half from now, it's going to be available as an iTunes book
for $40.
For $14 or $16. per 40K and fantasy. It'll cost you like $30 for both. But, you know, it's just like, they sure aren't doing themselves any favors to really make them seem like decent guys. Their stuff is awesome, but the company is run by jerks.
It just feels half-assed to me. Like, that's all it really comes down to.
There's your son again.
Shut up! It just feels half-assed to me, and that's what's really problematic about it, is because obviously there's a lot of work that goes into making this little booklet and putting it into the White Dwarf and doing these videos. And like,
and don't get me wrong, I think it's
fucking
awesome.
Well, I love that they're putting out the models for it. It's just,
I like that they've made White Dwarf feel like it's worth buying again.
Well, it's the only way to make it feel like it's worth buying. But the problem is that why? Why didn't they just do the rest of the book?
Yeah.
You know, like if demons were the big thing, and I get they've had these plague bearers on the back burner for a long fucking time. I mean, they've had these plague bearers done for what, 2 or 3 years now, is what I've heard. But really, it's like if you're going to put this many models out, like this kind of release is akin to what we would see when a new army book or codex comes out for release for an army.
Well, you know what could happen. I'm sure the odds are against it. But when Chaos and Fantasy got put out, they did Chaos Marines in the exact same month. Maybe they're gonna do Chaos Marines and Chaos Demons in the same month. I don't think they will.
That's a lofty. it's a lofty goal to look for. Word.
It is, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Workshop has really been into playing little jokes on their customers. You know, like hiding future products in current pictures and not letting you know that it's future products.
Right.
That kind of stuff. So it certainly.
Well,
flies
as Nathan would say,
direction.
They think they're Apple.
Yeah.
They just don't know what they're doing.
That's cute.
No, and that's exactly it. You know, but what really frustrates me about this is give us a new 40K Demons book. Give us a new Fantasy Demons book. Like, if you're going to be putting these models out, if you can't wait to get them on the table, you know, fix it. Put these out. But, you know, also at the same time, you don't want to look the gift seeker in the mouth, tongue, proboscis, whatever the fuck
ass
it is.
The Orcus.
Right. You know, you don't want to look a demonette in her half-revealed ass or nippleless tit. But really, it's, you know, I get that new models is great, but really it's like you've got other things to worry about. It just feels scatterbrained. I think that's the word I'm looking for. It feels like, where's your focus?
They always get so close to doing a great job, and it seems they just shit the bed when it's almost awesome. Mm-hmm. They always just like, fuck this. You know.
Yep. No, and that's exactly
premature,
it.
Premature. I'm not sure what the verb would be or the –
you know. But, you know, I think anytime you can release 6 models, and I can say that I'm happy about 3 of them or 2 out of 6 of them. To be perfectly honest with you, that's actually pretty decent. The fact that we got nice looking plague bearers that are in plastic fucking finally. And the fact that, you know, we've got, at least a seeker chariot that looks pretty okay. Everything else I'm not a huge fan of, but from that point, you know, it's just like, great, great for all those people who've been wanting to paint up, you know, some plague bearers in their armies without having to buy the metal ones or, you know, unable to get the metal ones for how long. I don't know
how long. I didn't even bother trying to get them when we opened up the store. I was just like, there's too much change going on right now that it seems not hurting.
I think any pewter box set, that pretty much applies.
Yeah.
But, yes. Okay, so that's the stupidity check for this week. I don't know. I can't tell if we're running a little bit short here. So, actually, I wanted to come back to Firestorm again. So, it's my show, so fuck it. We're going to come back to Firestorm a little bit more. What we've seen so far for Firestorm, I picked up a Terran fleet, put them together. I'm going to try to get them painted up. That's going to be pretty fun. But I wanted to talk a little bit about – now, Scott, you read the rule book as well. So how do you feel about the orders? So this is a little taste for next week.
How do you mean the orders?
Yeah, the orders, like for missions. Like the basic mission order that you have in the rule book is you have to destroy 70% of your opponent's fleet points. And the game pretty much ends as soon as you kill 70% of his fleet points, not at the end of the turn, but like as soon as you hit that level. So it is a bit of a race, which I kind of like. But you can substitute that order for a bunch of different orders that actually change the focus of how you're fighting your fleet. One of the orders is like you have to kill your opponent's Star Admiral with a boarding action. Another one of the orders is you have to kill 50% of your opponent's fleet points, but you also have to make sure that by doing that, you're killing all of his large and massive ships. You obviously did not read that part of the book.
No, I totally did. It was just I didn't remember they were called orders.
Yeah, orders or star orders, I think is what they called them. Which confused the shit out of me because they called them orders for like 6 pages. Then suddenly they were like star orders in bold. And I was like, is this a different rule I missed?
Got to match up with your star admiral. No, I think it's cool. It's another layer of customization to your fleet.
Yep.
Which I think they got rid of a little bit. I mean, I wasn't really familiar with first edition rules, but dropping a lot of the MARs and changing some stuff around looks like there's a bit of a flavor drop.
Hey, well, sorry, so. What does MAR stand for again?
Model Assigned Rules.
Okay.
Those are all the sort of fluffy rules.
Yeah, no, I knew what they were, but I just couldn't remember what the actual acronym was for.
Well, but really, I like the fact that they're gone. You know, to me, it feels like the game didn't need them. And it kind of slowed things down a little bit in the sense that it made a lot of fleets a lot harder to deal with in games. And it kind of did elongate the games a little bit. In some cases, it did more damage, so it kind of sped things up. But for the most part, that wasn't the case. It basically just made everything slightly more survivable, which wasn't necessarily what the game needed.
No. We had some guys playing on Friday, and it was Aquans versus Terrans, oddly enough. And it was just cruisers and frigates, nothing bigger. And they were done in about an hour and a half. It was just starter box versus starter box, really. And they were learning the rules as they went, and they had a fantastic time, and they liked how fast stuff died. I mean, it sucks when stuff goes down fast, but in the same sense, when you're dealing it out and it happens just as well to the other guy, suddenly you're getting a lot of resolution at a quick pace, and that's very satisfying.
I never played with them, so I'm willing to believe that, you know, their loss hasn't really hurt the game so much as it has sped it up a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the case. I think what's fun about Firestorm Armada is, like I said before, every turn you do feel like something's happening. You don't feel like you're just kind of going through the motions.
Well, and we also really, didn't use the cards.
No, we didn't use the cards, and that's.
And what might be interesting is if they had an MAR card that was like, if you have this card, one of your ships starts the game with an MAR. You know what I mean? So that way you can kind of have that differentiation. Like, I mean, in the world of big boats, because really this is what this game is. There's no two aircraft carriers that are the same. They all have their own quirks and their own sort of upgrades or how they learned to do something better or how this kind of wasn't so good. And it's kind of cool when you bring that into games where you might have like two ships in your whole fleet have got one special rule. Then it turns into you really fight to get him where he needs to be or you don't want him to blow up. Or like I think that would be really, really engaging.
Well, and that's the way that it is right now with the dreadnoughts and a lot of the special ships as well. You know, it's just the core fleets are a little bit more basic, but if you start going into like the Alliance of Kurok or the Xenian League stuff,
okay.
The majority of those ships all have more rules. And even in the book, they all have more rules.
Yeah, like I did see
some Tarkarian battleships. And that Tarkarian battleship has like four Mar rules, you know, and he's not much different than the Terran Razorthorn battleship, but like the Razorthorn battleship is just a really heavy hitting, you know, powerful battleship as opposed to the Tarkarian one, which doesn't hit even remotely as hard as that one does. But really, I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that it's optional, and I guess if the game starts to feel dry, that's a great way to add stuff to it. But they've also changed them up a lot. They're not the same rules that they were in the first edition, so I would actually have to go through and kind of play with them quite a bit to see if I actually like them or not, because even for my directorate, like all my biohazard ammo is gone for those ships. I basically get like espionage and a couple of other rules now, which is interesting, but I don't know if it's really, really worth taking. But, you know, the game that I played, I really quite liked it. So I thought that it was pretty good. So, you know, hopefully if I can get another two games in here in the next week or so, I'll have a lot more to say about it. But a lot of changes for the people who haven't read the second edition rulebook yet. Tons of different changes. Changes to torpedoes, to wings, to boarding actions, to the way point defense works. To the way that you are deploying, you know, like all sorts of different things have changed. The shield ships are 100 times different. Like it really is a pretty dramatic shift, which was interesting because when they first posted the little blurb on their website for the second edition book, all they really said was clarified boarding action rules and slightly different.
So much easier to understand.
Slightly different campaign setups or something. And I was just like, really? Is that all? Like, it's just going to be the same shit with like no real changes.
Well,
but
look at how many change haters there are. I mean,
oh, there's a lot.
Like the guys that are playing at the shop, they're the kind of guys who like to research all their stuff. So they've been reading on the forums before they actually played. And a lot of them are kind of like, I don't know if I like, you know, all the changes made in the second edition. And I'm kind of like, oh, fair enough. I mean, if you've been looking at guys comparing the two in pros and cons, that's probably what they have done. But at the same breath, I'm like, yeah, but the game I had, I get was basic, but it was so good. And I've played enough Gothic to get how the game I played was different and how it was better.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing going on with Second Dead is all these guys hate change. They figured out how
well,
stuff
that's
works.
Wargaming in general.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm saying I think they're all wrong.
Well, I think the joke that I said
worse than Hitler.
Yes, very much so. I think the joke that I made last week when I first started looking on the forums was, you know that this game has made it because people are already swearing off Second Edition and declaring that they will only play first.
When the hardcores are pissed off, you've done something.
That's how it works, man. But again, I think all that really comes down to in Wargaming as a whole.
They're planning an ETC of
Fire Oh, Storm. I'm sure. I'm waiting for the 6th edition ETC. But really,
oh, speaking of which, you should probably do a plug for how we're planning on doing a tournament at Imaginary Wars for Firestorm Armada.
Yes, in September I am planning on running a tournament for Firestorm Armada at Imaginary Wars in Calgary, Alberta. It will likely be a 3-game tournament. It's going to be pretty straightforward. There's going to be 3 set scenarios. I haven't decided on a lot of the specifics for it, but basically what you will need is a 1,000-point fleet and a deck of cards, and then everything else that goes with it, the rules, the up-to-date current second edition rulebook, and dice and all that kind of shit. But for the most part, like I've pretty much decided it's going to be 1,000 points, it's going to be 3 games, and everyone's going to be playing 3 specific scenarios. And I think that's how we're going to do it, and we'll kind of play it off as kind of the first official FSA tournament that we've seen in Alberta, at least that I know of.
Yeah, well, and we'll see what... I mean, every time we do tournaments, yeah, we try and do something kind of cool and make it so that we know that we're not trying to do everything at once and make it the best thing ever that's going to just fucking fall flat on its face.
So the big thing
and we
about
try
it,
and pay attention to what works and doesn't work. So the next one, if you go to 2, you'll actually, it won't be a carbon copy or it was all okay, except they fucked up totally in this other one thing.
Yeah, they were still playing the last edition and it was bullshit.
But really, you know, I think the only other thing that I'll throw out at people is you will be required to have a painted fleet, fully painted. So. Yes. Do not expect to, you know, show up with a half-assembled, half-painted fleet because you will be turned away at the door. I'm a big fan of having painted stuff on the table. And to be perfectly honest with you, we're not talking about Warhammer. We're talking about painting 12 models. So as far as I'm concerned, there's no excuse to have your stuff
unpainted. If I can
unpainted.
Paint a Dreadnought in 25 minutes and it comes out looking pretty
alright, well, that's color, no excuse. One color, an Army Painter dip, and you will look like you spent some real time.
Yeah, these are very easy. These models are phenomenal. They've got a ton of details. So the amount of work that you have to put into these to make them look good and to make them look finished is not hard at all. But yeah, stay tuned. Date to be announced, all that kind of stuff. But that is the idea, is we're actually going to have a bit of a tournament. And then... kind of see where the game goes from there, because I feel like that game would be a lot of fun in a tournament setting. Okay, so that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Kyle.
And Scott.
Have a good one.